and welcome everyone to Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to New York Metro Weather's second installment of the show that we don't have a name for yet, but we're actually going to work on coming up with that, and we have an interactive thing planned where you guys can be involved in the naming of it. So hopefully nothing too corny comes out of that poll, but we are really enjoying doing these radio segments that we did. We did one last week in regards to our winter forecast, and we're doing another one this week just kind of as an overview of the weather, where we can look at what's going on in the pattern for the week ahead and in the future, and anything that's happened in the week before that. And we want to have a opportunity to discuss that and go over some things that have happened and give you some, not just, you know, meteorological analysis, but also some chatter about it. And this, you can see, have an idea what our forecasters think as the week goes on. So I'm here with my coworker, Doug. He's back with us. You there, Doug?
Yep.
Awesome. So Doug was with us last week as well. Obviously, he's a big part of the team here at New York Metro Weather, and we're going to go over some things. I guess we'll start right with what's going on right now. We have a storm system that's coming up the coast here, or actually through the mid-Atlantic over the next couple of hours. It is a mid-level disturbance that's really weakening as it comes into the northeast United States, but there is some tropical moisture involved. And I think one of the major questions is going to be how exactly that affects us.
I mean, another shocker. There's quite a bit of mild discrepancy the day of the event, you know, makes things very easy for us.
I'm waiting for the day when we have at this range.
Yeah.
Or something close to it. But I guess it's the nature of the beast, you know?
Right. I mean, if there was more mild agreement, we wouldn't have jobs pretty much. It's better than that easy. So we can look at it that way.
Yeah, no one would be listening to us right now.
Yeah.
So this thing coming up the coast tomorrow, or tonight, really, we have a short wave that's currently over the Tennessee Valley. That's going to weaken as it comes east. And the remnants of tropical moisture coming up the coast as well. That's going to make things a little more difficult. And forecast models really struggle when it comes to these little interactions, especially along the eastern seaboard with the Baraclinic Zone offshore. And we have that little low pressure developing off the coast, and we'll see if there's a maximum of precipitation there. In layman's terms, I guess the best way to put it is we're expecting rain to spread into the area tonight. And then what happens after that kind of is a big question. We're going to have to monitor that in the short term as to whether that heaviest tropical rain and low-level jet comes up into our area or not.
Right. I mean, I think it's a good point you brought up about how the tropical moisture can really throw a wrench into the forecast models. They're really not good at handling the interactions between tropical systems and extratropical systems because they're built completely differently. But completely different physics. So the model physics are really not meant for those two complex things to interact with each other. I'm honestly leaning more towards the offshore solutions at this point. I feel like there might be a subsidence area over our region, because the shortwave is going to pass to our west, and then the tropical moisture and the low pressure itself looks to be kind of just off to the east.
And it's such a fine line, too.
There could be a subsidence zone. So, I mean, maybe, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a brief burst of heavy rain, but for the most part, I think the heaviest is going to stay offshore.
And that's more, you know, you get isotropic lift from the shortwave itself and low-level jet coming up. But then it looks like the tropical moisture on most of the global models stays off to our south and east. So the question becomes, like you said, do you get that sinking air in between the lift from the shortwave itself and the tropical moisture, too? And I think that is a real... little bit of a wrench in the forecast, because 2 days ago we had a lot of models showing, you know, that low level jet over us. And so now we're in a situation where the rain's going to begin tomorrow morning, and we have a little bit of a question in terms of how it's going to play out.
Right. I mean, actually the latest NAM, it definitely looks like it shifted east compared to the last few runs. Not surprisingly, it's the NAM, but you know.
NAM shifted east at the last second. What a shock.
Yeah.
So that's the interesting forecast for tonight. I think one safe bet that there definitely is that there's going to be rain. And that's overnight tonight. Clouds have already streamed in. Some areas seeing showers already, and that disturbance is going to bring rain. And that's pretty much through the morning commute. And the heaviest rain, I guess if I had to pin it down to one area, it would probably be along the Jersey coast to Long Island, although I think the real tropical rains will end up off in the Atlantic.
Right. Yeah, maybe Eastern Long Island could get clipped by them, but I don't know. As of now, I'm really leaning towards the heaviest tropical moisture remaining offshore. We might not even get into the more sustained rainfall until tomorrow evening when the upper level shortwave moves through. Granted, it will be weakening, but it will be interacting with, a little bit more moist air mass than we have now. So that could maybe produce some bursts of moderate rain tomorrow evening, tomorrow night. But I don't know, through the day tomorrow, I'm not really seeing much that would indicate sustained periods of heavy rain.
And that has been, for the most part, the global models have shown that over the last couple of days. I mean, the NAM has been the one model that has brought the heaviest rains right overhead. But really,
the RGEM was also, the RGEM was actually pretty consistent with it, at least yesterday, too. So the NAM wasn't completely on its own, which is why we couldn't throw its solution out. I mean, the RGEM is pretty reliable. I haven't had a chance to look at the RGEM today, though. So
I haven't seen it either. But
I do know last night it was showing over an inch of rain. But I would imagine it's 0-0 and coming out in like an hour or so is probably going to be more offshore.
Yeah, I would think that, really monitoring it tonight is going to be the best thing. But if you're listening and you're expecting very heavy rain, driving rain tomorrow morning on your morning commute, I wouldn't hold your breath. I think there could be a period of moderate to heavy rain, but I don't think it's going to be anything crazy. That being said, along the area shores, the models are showing a strong onshore flow because what happens essentially is a low pressure system develops off the mid-Atlantic coast. So even though the heaviest tropical rains are going to be off the Atlantic Ocean, you are going to get very strong or relatively strong east winds that are going to come along the Jersey shore. And you could see that on the latest high resolution short-term models that are showing 22, 24 knot winds along the Jersey shore and Long Island as well. So if you live on the area beaches, it's really a mini nor'easter is what we're going to be dealing with now, where it looks like the heaviest precipitation is probably going to stay just off the coast to spare us all a gigantic washout of a day on Tuesday. It's still going to be unsettled. It's not going to be a pleasant day tomorrow.
It's kind of an interesting little preview of El Nino. I mean, it's a classic. There's a southern stream disturbance with a plethora of moisture that tries to come up the coast. And sometimes in the El Ninos, most of the moisture ends up staying offshore. I mean, obviously every system is different, but it kind of is a nice little preview of what we can expect this winter. Southern stream originates storms with plenty of moisture. And the question is, will they make it up the coast? Where exactly do they track? Yeah, we will probably be tracking a lot more southern stream oriented or originated, I should say, coastal storms throughout the winter.
And the strengthening, too. It seems like in El Ninos, you get these storms that strengthen right off the coast here. And we're seeing that here on the models. I mean, the low-pressure system tucks right in off the coast there, and it strengthens a little bit. Now, interestingly, the models are showing, if you look on a global scale, you have the tropical storm that ends up recurving, and it almost seems like most of the tropical moisture that was expected to come up into our area is going to veer towards that system. So like you said, you get that subsidence in our area. So instead of that tropical moisture coming up here, it veers off to the east and then eventually becomes engulfed in the tropical storm. And I think that's one of the main things to take away for tomorrow. There is some tropical moisture involved, but it's not as involved as previous forecast models were showing. So unsettled, but not totally a washout.
Yeah, I think that says it pretty well.
Now, moving forward into the week, it's a little bit really an active week. We do have the upper-level shortwave moving overhead on Wednesday afternoon. So like you said, still some possibility of showers there. And then we have, if we look on a more regional or national scale, a really big system into the Midwest on, I believe it's Wednesday afternoon. So right on the heels of this storm, you get this big upper level trough that ejects out of the southwestern United States, and a very powerful shortwave being modeled with a low pressure system down into the 990s moving through Nebraska, up into Iowa there, and the Storm Prediction Center has already pegged an area of enhanced risk. That's on day three.
Enhanced, wow.
Yeah, that's out over the Midwest, so that's on Wednesday. And that's a really powerful shortwave, and that's going to eventually wrap up with a low-pressure system into the Great Lakes. The effects of that system in our area aren't really going to come until Thursday night, and they're mostly going to come in the form of showers. So the system wraps up and helps push a cold front off to the east here. But then we're going to sit underneath the cold pool from that upper level low over the weekend. So it's going to get chillier as the week goes on, towards the end of the week and into the weekend.
Oh, yeah, that system definitely looks primed to produce severe weather. One thing I've been noticing is that behind the system could be a lot of cold air. Plunging into it. And when you have a lot of cold air plunging into the system and it's strengthening, and then you have the plume of subtropical moisture ahead of it, you get the two air masses kind of lashing, and then you get a pretty good outbreak. I mean, enhanced base, it's pretty strong wording.
Yeah. Yep. And I think the shortwave itself, if anyone out there is listening that's listening to the show is looking at the models, you can see how powerful that shortwave is over the central United States. That one means business on most of the forecast models, and it looks like it's going to bring a pretty significant cold front through the Midwestern United States. That's a big time system, and this is the time of year when you start to get these storms. And you know, the effects of the storms in the Great Lakes in our area kind of depend on exactly where they track and how strong it is and the evolution of the entire system.
Right, or if it's still strengthening, because it looks like by the time it gets to the Great Lakes, it'll be occluding. And once the storm occludes, the temperature gradient becomes less, so you're not really getting that same type of lift and moisture advection for severe thunderstorms. Instead, you're just getting showers, which makes sense.
Yeah, and I think, you know, at the same time, these things seem to gradually become more impactful for our area as time goes on. And we'll see how things go over the next couple of weeks.
I mean, as the wavelengths lengthen through December and the winter, a stormless system like this would probably be more inclined to track maybe further east, and then you're closer to the core of the storm before it occludes.
Correct.
And you can get stronger effects from that. I mean, another reason why we expect this winter to be very active in terms of precipitation, maybe not all snowstorms, of course, but I'd be pretty surprised if we went this whole winter with a negative departure in precipitation.
Yeah, well, I would say the chances of that happening are very low, for sure.
Yeah.
With that being said, today was a big day in the meteorological community in terms of the numbers that came out for the El Nino.
Right, yeah, I mean, I do think we have the Al Marino. I forgot how to pronounce his last name, so I apologize for that. But that SLP number in the North Pacific, I think, was about 10 millibars. Yeah, I saw that number posted.
I didn't even know that.
Send you the link later, but I think it was 1,010 millibars, which is very low, well below the threshold to produce a negative NAO.
Does anyone know what it was last year? What was it last winter?
I'm not sure what the exact number was last year. I do remember it also falling under the threshold for a negative NAO. I don't think it was as low as this year's, though. Granted, last year wasn't really a true El Nino. I mean, it was weak.
That's what I was just going to say.
Correlation probably didn't work as well.
That's the interesting debate in terms of that, because, and for those listening that are wondering what we're talking about, in October there is a correlation that was research was published in regards to the sea level pressure in the northern Pacific Ocean and the resulting North Atlantic oscillation over the next winter. And so when you look at that October number, the threshold is around 1,013 millibars. If the sea level pressure is lower than that, typically the NAO averages negative during the following winter. And this year, the sea level pressure in the North Pacific during the month of October was well below that threshold. So that's the debate moving forward. And the other thing that was discussed today was the new numbers came out for the El Nino, obviously on Monday. We'll have to be discussing that over the next couple of weeks for sure. But the big number is 2.8 now. So that was a move up there. And the Nino one and two regions drop down as well. So interestingly, El Nino seems to be still strengthening with the forcing near the dateline, and it's still now getting up to some pretty remarkable levels.
Yeah, it looks like it could easily hit the 3.0 magic. Not that that's a magic number per se, but it's a nice round number. It looks like it could easily hit that in region 3.4, which is absolutely remarkable. I think that, yeah. I don't know if 97.98 ever got that high in that region. Granted, 97.98 was a lot stronger further east, but in region 3.4, this El Nino might beat that El Nino, which is truly remarkable.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing, too, is when you look at now, things are kind of still evolving. So when you look at the outgoing long-wave radiation, now we have some really strong convection and low-level forcing near the dateline, too. So that kind of enhances the debate. Where is the El Nino going? Is it moving west? Is it moving east? How is it adjusting?
I mean, yeah, it does bring up a good debate. I do think it looks like it's gradually moving westward. I mean, I think what's also really important is not just the anomalies of each region, but the absolute temperatures of the regions also.
Yeah.
Because region 4, the further west region, that's pretty close to the dateline. And of course, as we talked about on last week's show, when you have the tropical forcing closer to the dateline as opposed to further east, it tends to lead to colder and snowier weather patterns for the eastern U.S. But in 97-98, the very strong El Nino, which produced literally no snow through December, January, and February, did not have that much warmth in the El Nino region so far west. But today, the number came out as, I think, 1.7 was the anomaly in Nino 4, which isn't as strong of an anomaly as in areas further east. But since those regions tend to be warmer on average, the absolute temperature is the warmest in that region compared to the other regions. So
gotcha.
Considering it's the warmest there, that could lead to more forcing there and thus more forcing closer to the dateline.
Now, there's still plenty of subsurface warmth, too. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly, you know, I don't know if those forecasts that were calling for an early peak of an El Nino are going to end up working out. There's still plenty of subsurface warmth. There's a lot to go here. It's just a matter to me of, you know, whether this El Nino moves west or east or, you know, exactly how it aligns itself over the next couple of weeks. And
right.
I think that has a huge impact on global circulations as opposed to, you know, is this the strongest El Nino ever? Is it going to keep strengthening? What's happening here? What's happening there? I think how the El Nino aligns itself and where we see it's a fluid process and where we see it aligning and evolving over the next couple of weeks. That's the most important thing, if you ask me.
Right. I think that's definitely more important than looking at the literal numbers and seeing what exact time it peaks. I think the evolution and the orientation of the El Nino and the forcing will matter a lot more than individual numbers.
Yeah, I agree. And it's going to be interesting to watch it evolve. One thing's for sure, I think November is going to end up very warm in our area. We kind of highlighted this. All of the indexes that we use to, you know, kind of look at if and when cold air is going to move into the area from, you know, the poles or Canada, whatever the case might be, all of them are saying the exact opposite in the long range. And the atmospheric pattern evolving through the medium range has very little room for there to be any kind of significant cold air moving into our region. If it does happen to get cold, and I think this is the interesting thing, people are expecting it not to be cold at all. When we talk like this, that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is that sustained cold and below normal temperatures are not going to happen. You're still going to get these seasonal progressions where cold front comes through, upper level low sits overhead, and temperatures drop into the 20s because it's November. That's going to happen.
Right.
but I think what's going to be missing is any change to a very wintry or cold pattern. You know, last year we saw a big pattern change in November. I think that's going to be missing from this year, and I think the general pattern is going to average warmer than normal.
Yeah, last year we had some very cold readings. I believe we were actually well below average in November temperature-wise. I forgot the exact departure.
Well, there was that typhoon that recurved, and then there was a stratospheric warming event as well, and then the pattern, that's what happened.
And then, of course, the stratosphere completely restrengthened itself in December, and then we're left with a very warm December, which completely which made everyone's winter forecasts kind of come to a halt, pretty much.
Yep. And I know you wanted to touch on the stratospheric information as well. And I think big talk in the community as well is the fact that we're starting out with a very strong stratospheric vortex this year.
Right. I mean, to be fair, climatologically, it is expected to strengthen this time of year, but it's strengthening more this time of year than it normally would. It's definitely stronger than average, which increases the evidence for our winter forecast, which called for a warm December, because if you have a strong stratospheric vortex that tends to lead to the polar vortex in the troposphere to be stronger. And when that's stronger, it doesn't really get weakened. It doesn't get affected by blocking, and blocking can't really develop. So yeah, it looks like things are lining up pretty nicely for a warm December. I don't see any indications for colder than normal December. Doesn't mean, as you said, it doesn't mean we can't get any cold. I mean, you know, this weekend might even be pretty chilly under that, once that cold front comes through. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's one more cold blast. But, you know, in the means, for a monthly period, it's going to remain pretty warm for the next month.
And that's the thing. I mean, with winter forecasts and even long-term forecasts, it's so variable with things like cold fronts and cold blasts and timing. Because when you look at meteorology, you get one good cold blast and you time a short wave coming in right behind it, and who knows, we could have a snowstorm December 5th, you know?
Right.
But what we look at it from a seasonal perspective is the pattern going to be conducive to snow in general in the eastern United States or the northeastern United States? And the answer through November and from what we can see with squinted eyes into December is no. But that's not to say that it's not going to snow and it's not going to be cold. What we have confidence in is that the periods of cold will be outweighed by the periods of above normal temperatures, and that snow is going to end up averaging below normal.
Right, at least to start the winter anyway. Because, yeah, there's only so much that a seasonal forecast can see on a time scale. Seasonal forecasts are more for, you know, general statements in monthly periods. You can't really see those small nuances and details that lead to maybe a 3 days of cold and one energetic disturbance coming through at the same time. That's hard to time. But, you know, as we head towards February, though, there are more indications that we could get sustained periods of cold and blocking and moisture. So you're not trying to manufacture timing over a bunch of features in a 3 day period. You'll have most of the month to have ingredients come together for a snowstorm, which is why we're confident in February.
That's the name of the game too. I mean, the general game at this point for forecasters is to look at when is a pattern going to become favorable so that it's not any snow event that we get isn't lucky. You want to have a pattern that is, you know, conducive to snow and is supportive with cold air and moisture. And that's the battle moving forward. Or else, you know, if we were to forecast any other way, we'd be just guessing.
Right.
You know, that's why we do what we do, and that's how we came to the conclusions that we did. So, I guess let's summarize the week coming up. So, tonight, rain. It's not going to be anything crazy. I don't think there's going to be any torrential downpours. There is a potential for heavier rain for a period of time, but that should be fairly brief. Doug, did you get the rest of the NAM run? What did that end up showing?
I haven't looked at the totals yet. I can do that in a sec.
Not that we're model hugging or anything like that. We're just trying to relay the latest information. That's all. Yeah, so the NAM has definitely... So what's happening is for tomorrow, if you're looking at just layman's terms, the models have been showing a low-level jet moving up into the area and lots of tropical moisture feeding heavy rain into New Jersey, New York, Connecticut. What's happening now is the incoming shortwave is going to track over western Pennsylvania, so that's a mid-level disturbance. And then you have the tropical storm that's going to be recurving out to sea. Essentially, after a period of moderate, maybe heavy rain in the morning on Tuesday, what happens is in between the low-level jet and tropical moisture off into the Atlantic that's veering off to the east and the shortwave over Pennsylvania, you get sinking air. And that's going to inhibit the development of precipitation. And what's really going to happen is things are going to be a lot slower in terms of rainfall than we expected. And that's you know, interestingly enough, going to cause some forecasts to have a problem moving forward. I think we got about five minutes left. We had a caller on here for a second, but it looks like they hung up. If you're still listening and you were calling, call back. We'd love to talk with you. Anyway, Doug, what were you going to say?
I see two callers on the switchboard. I don't know.
Go ahead, Doug. What were you going to say?
I was going to say I did get the NAM, and it definitely shows a period of subsidence on Tuesday afternoon and early Tuesday evening. And then it actually brings some moderate to heavy rain with the short wave coming through on Tuesday night into early Wednesday morning. So that could be it wouldn't shock me if that period, Tuesday night into early Wednesday morning or into the overnight, is when we'd actually have the heaviest rain. As far as the actual like QPF, the true precipitation verbatim, because of that, it actually ends up showing around an inch of rain in a lot of areas. Further west in central Jersey, it's a little less. There is a little maximum in New York City, actually, because of the shortwave moving through in tomorrow evening, tomorrow night, of an inch and a quarter of rain.
Yeah.
So we'll have to keep an eye on that secondary shortwave moving through.
It'll be interesting to watch evolve, too, because these storms seem to have little mesoscale areas where the rain develops and stays heavier. And so that's the main thing for tomorrow. The heaviest rains are going to avoid us moving off to the east. Then a secondary max of rain after some rain Tuesday morning looks to move in early Wednesday morning, late Tuesday night. And then that'll be out of here by probably Wednesday afternoon after 12 o'clock or so. And then
I don't mean to interrupt. I think I might be able to accept this caller. Oh, whoops. A list of call. Oh, sorry about that. I thought there was a caller, and I clicked accept call, and then it dropped. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, it looks like we're having some caller connection problems. Anyway, so Thursday is the next event, and that's with the big storm coming through the Midwest. So on Wednesday, the big story is going to be the severe weather event over the Midwestern United States. And then that system is eventually going to make its way here, but it's going to be weakening by the time it does so. It's going to strengthen. It's going to be at its peak over the Midwestern United States, and then some rain moving into our area on Thursday. But things really look to be clearing out by the weekend. Colder, though, Doug, and I think that upper-level low is going to make it feel real chilly.
Yeah, especially considering how warm it's been for most of this month. It'll feel like a shock to the system. It won't be as cold as it was last November, but it definitely will be it might be a nice little preview of winter for the first time this year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the interesting thing is these cold blasts, how long are they going to last? You know, this one looks transient, and I think that fits right into our forecast moving forward over the next week or so, and that'll lead us right into the end of the forecast. That brings us to the weekend, and then next Monday, where it'll probably still be pretty cool out, and then we'll have our next weekly episode.
And one little funny thing I kind of noticed, actually, it looks like out ahead of that low pressure that's moving into the Great Lakes, there's almost a little bit of like a bootleg NAO block for a couple of days, which helps the cold pool stay in our area through the whole weekend rather than moving out in Monday.
Yeah.
So if it weren't for that, the cold air would move out even quicker. But because of that, we might end up having like, you know, 2, 3, 4 days of chilly weather before it gets warmer again.
Yeah. And I think that'll be interesting to see because I'm sure we'll get some posts and tweets in regards to the fact that we're calling for a warm November and it's 20 degrees outside.
Yeah.
But
usual.
We're being prompted to wrap it up. So we are going to wrap it up. We hope you guys have enjoyed our show. Again, it's been a pleasure. We had a bunch of listeners again today, so it's really exciting for us. Stay tuned. We're going to have a poll come out this week where we want you guys to name it, and we're going to let you all get involved in the naming of the show as long as it's not ridiculous, which I'm sure there will be some ridiculous ones, but hey, you know, it'll be fun. And we'll be back here next Monday. Doug, thanks for joining in again today, and we'll both be back next week. This is, again, New York Metro Weather. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys. Have a great week and a great weekend ahead. Good night.